If history is right, when ancient Rome was in power, its soldiers, at least for the most part, were forbidden from being married during their enlistment. In other words, once you are drafted, once you're brought into the Roman military, you can't get married as long as you're a Roman soldier. Now, that may not have been an issue for too many men if they had short enlistment periods. But when Augustus Caesar was in power, soldiers were serving for 20 years. And you can imagine that that would have been somewhat distressing to some of the soldiers. The Roman military made up some rules about marriage, but it has not been the only one. As you go back and you look at Christianity, after it was started, the Bible, 1 Timothy 4, 1-3, says that people were going to engage in some acts of apostasy. There was going to be a falling away. There was going to be a drifting, a turning from the truth. One of the things that Paul spoke about was marriage, and it's exactly right. What I'm about to say may not have been the exact fulfillment of what Paul predicted about marriage, but it certainly is consistent with it. You see, within a few hundred years after the church was established by Jesus, Catholic priests came up with a rule about marriage. Catholic priests sometimes said that marriage was forbidden, but they also came up with a rule that said that no marriage was valid. No marriage was authorized. No marriage was going to be recognized unless it was performed by a priest. When we think about marriage in the past and even now, we find that people have come up with all kinds of rules about it. Sometimes even saying it's wrong. If we look at our modern society, things have not changed very much when it comes to rules and marriage. In fact, when we look at our modern culture, we find that people have in many ways messed up so badly the home and marriage that we now have, especially with our youngest generation of adults. People confused about it. There are now people questioning where marriage has come from, who started marriage, and who should determine the rules for marriage. Well, there's no reason to be confused about marriage because we can answer these questions. We do not need to turn, as some seem to think, to the courts to figure out what's right and wrong when it comes to marriage. The Bible has all the information that we need about the subject of marriage. And a good starting point for the subject of marriage is not in Genesis. It's not in Matthew 19 that you might suspect, but I think maybe a great starting point is found in the book of Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 13. In just a moment, I'm going to read from Hebrews chapter 13, verse 4. In this verse, we find the Hebrew writer referring to marriage. And we also find in this passage his referring to two other things. In this same verse, in this one verse, he refers to God. And he also uses the word judge. The Hebrew writer affirmed that God is going to judge some things based on relationships, one of which is marriage. Now, if you found that passage, let's look at it together. He says, let marriage, there's our subject, let marriage be had or held in honor among all, and let the bed be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. Now, based on what we find in this passage, I might ask, what gives God the right to judge people about marriage? Who does God think he is to say to our world, you're authorized to marry this person, and I'm going to forbid you from marrying that person? What gives God that kind of power and right and authority? Well, we might answer those questions by saying, first of all, God is God. God is the one who instituted marriage, and he knows that. We also might point out that if men will not recognize God as God, if they will not let him be their God, then they're likely not going to be inclined to follow his design for marriage. Now, you may remember very early in the Bible, Genesis chapter 2. The Bible says, we're here. Mankind was created by God. And not only was mankind created by God, but the first two people, Adam and Eve, we accept those people as literal individuals, literal man, literal woman, God joined them together in marriage. God decreed, if you will, from Genesis 1 and 2, that there was going to be humanity and that a male and female were going to be united in marriage. And that's exactly what God did. This point is so important that when Jesus comes on the scene in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 6, he says God joins people together. That's what he did in the book of Genesis. And this is what he does now when it comes to marriage. If we look at our country, though, the current state of affairs in America is that we have courts, multiple courts, claiming that marriage is no longer a relationship between a man and a woman. How far the government goes, I don't know. Society will one day, let's say that a donkey can be married to a woman. There's just no telling how far the things might progress as far as the craziness. But you know, regardless of what men may say is legal and allowable when it comes to marriage, regardless of what society and perhaps our friends and associates think about marriage, regardless of how maybe we and others feel about marriage. The Bible affirms that God is the creator of marriage. He sets some rules about marriage. And Hebrews 13 verse 4 tells us that he's going to enforce those rules. Maybe not always in this life, but there will be an accounting. And this is the bottom line when it comes to marriage. If men choose, and they're given free will, if people choose to not follow God's plan when it comes to marriage, they will be judged. That's the promise in Hebrews 13 verse 4. God says, here's my way, and if you choose to take the highway instead, there will come a time, a day of reckoning. God put together marriage because it's good for humanity. Back there in Genesis 2 verse 18, you may remember that passage as being the verse where God says it's not good for man to be alone. Now, the single state is not a sin. Marriage is not something that we must have or we're going to die. If we fail to get married, God does not send us to hell because we decided to stay single. In fact, in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, Paul said that the single state for some people, or maybe in some circumstances, is actually going to be the better choice than marriage. But we do find, as we look at the world, a high percentage of the earth's population does decide to get married. If a person does decide to get married, there are some things biblically that the individual should consider. And you might think that we would find those things in the New Testament, but I'm going to turn back to the Old Testament. Deuteronomy. And from Deuteronomy, look at some information in the 7th chapter. As you look at Deuteronomy 7, God here is telling his people that they were going to come into a land, a new land. And God said, I want you to know that this land that you're going to come into, it is currently occupied by some others. There's some people in this land that are known as the Canaanites, and the Jebusites are there, the Hivites are there, and some otherites as well. God said, I want you to come into this land, and you as the nation of Israel, as my people, God says, I want you to look at these ites, and I want you to remove them. In fact, God says you need to utterly destroy them. Our world pays attention to pollution and polluters. Our world says pollution is a bad thing. If you're a polluter, you're a bad person. When you look at Deuteronomy 7, you find polluters. The Jebusites, the Canaanites, the Amorites. They were polluters, not that they were throwing trash in the land. But they polluted the land with sin. These were evil, wicked people. Today we hear some information about ISIS, and there are calls from various quarters. They're evil people. They'll not change. They'll not convert. They're doing terrible things. We need to wipe them out. Well, that's kind of what was going on with the ites. Their sins were a little different, but again, it was the same basic principle. And God said, things with these nations are so bad, there's only one way to rectify the problem. And that is, they've got to go. You need to uproot them. You need to remove them from the land. They cannot continue to be there if you're going to go there. No covenant, no agreement could be made with them. That's what God said in Deuteronomy 7 verse 2. And then in Deuteronomy 7 verse 3, we find this statement. After God says you can't have any arrangements with these people, they got to go. God also says, neither shall thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter shall not give unto his son, or thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shall thou take unto thy son. Now marriage is good. Remember Genesis 2 verse 18? God says that. But now God says in Deuteronomy 7, as he deals with his people, there are some marriage partners that are not good. God says there are going to be some people that I'm forbidding you to marry. You don't want to be with those heathen people. And then in Deuteronomy 7, verse 4, the thought continues, and we have a bit of an explanation there. God says, don't marry those people, verse 3, for this reason. For, because he will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. So will anger Jehovah, and that it's going to be kindled against you, and he will destroy thee quickly. The worst thing a child of God can do in this life is, for whatever reason, turn away from God. And God warned in Deuteronomy 7 that marriage is a state where a person, a follower of God, married to a heathen spouse, could well be inclined to turn away from following the one true God. You see, when we look at marriage in terms of how the Bible describes it, it is a relationship. It is a union where two people are supposed to work closely together. There is to be an alliance. There is to be a joining, which is unlike anything else in life. And God's plan for that marriage is two people are united, is for both of those individuals to help one another get to heaven. Now, if thinking about that fact, if one spouse does not want to get up and go to services one morning, or maybe several mornings, then hopefully that other spouse, who's also committed to God, on the right track spiritually, will help that spouse, will encourage that spouse that doesn't want to get up and go to services. This has been borne out by various studies. If you look at some of the studies where there are two faithful Christian parents in a home, the impact from those two Christian parents is, again and again, greater, more effective in raising faithful Christian kids than having one faithful parent in the home or having no faithful parents in the home. A non-Christian spouse is almost always going to make marriage a more difficult union. Before getting married, or perhaps even, we might say, dating someone, we should give some consideration to the principle that we find in Deuteronomy chapter 7. We should ask if the person that interests us is someone who is going to help push us, propel us, aid us in getting to heaven, or not. Now, we might look at a person and say, well, this individual is probably not. I don't believe this individual is going to help me get to heaven. In fact, this individual is probably going to hinder my spiritual life. If we're ever in a situation where we're thinking about dating someone and certainly thinking about marrying someone, and we come to that conclusion that this person might impede our progress when it comes to getting to heaven, it's time not to just walk away. It's time to run away. If we're in a slightly different situation, we look at a person and we think, well, I'm not sure. Maybe this person would help me to get to heaven. Maybe this person would not. Maybe this person would hinder my ability to go to heaven. Once again, think carefully about that relationship. Give consideration to how hot hell is going to be and the duration of hell. That is, it's going to be eternal. We do not want to join ourselves to an individual that is somewhat like Deuteronomy chapter 7. Someone who has value, someone who has a way of life, which is not going to help us get to heaven. We should seek a spouse who's really interested in going to heaven and wants to help us get there as well. Marriage, as we look at the Bible, is a divine institution. And the Bible warns us in various ways. It tells us to be careful when it comes to participating, or we might say partaking, of this union. We need to use care. We need to be very cautious because God says marriage is designed to be a relationship which lasts for a long, long time. As I look at America, and I think you probably see it in the same way, we now live in what is often thought of as a throwaway society. Within the last week, I had to swap out my desktop computer. I didn't think, because it was about 8 years old, it was worth anything, but never hurts to check. So I called a local PC shop that built it for me, and I said, out of curiosity, is it worth anything? No, it's not. Okay. They said, just scrap it. Get rid of it. That throwaway mentality that we have for computers, cell phones, and some other things, does it not bleed over into the relationship of marriage as well? It does. While in Tennessee, about a week and a half ago, I sat in on a class, an interesting class, a class unlike I've ever sat in on before. The class had preachers and elders and probably a few others in it. And the class had individuals coming forward. And they read questions that various elderships had sent in. Elderships in various places are facing some very unusual questions, sometimes some very difficult questions. They were looking for some feedback, and the questions from these elderships were submitted and then discussed in this particular class. And as I listened to the questions that were being asked, one question involved a couple, been married for about 3 months, and they wanted to get a divorce. Married less than 90 days, and they wanted to see if they could have their marriage annulled. And as I thought about this past week, the thought crossed my mind. I kept my desktop PC for longer than some people keep their spouse. There are some people who will keep their cell phone longer than they will keep their spouse. Marriage, as far as what we see in our day and time, it's not often looked at as a relationship which is designed for life. That is, until one spouse dies. In this area, I don't know if you saw the advertisement or not. It was on a restaurant sign over in the area of Elkhart. It said, wedding dress for sale. Worn once by mistake. Now, that sign appears every once in a while, and when I see that sign, it reminds me a little bit of how some seem to regard marriage as a bit like baseball. Step up to the plate, and ball's thrown, and you get a chance to strike at the ball. And if it doesn't work out, well, that's okay. They'll throw you another ball. You'll get another strike. And some seem to have the idea, when it comes to marriage, you just continue to strike. You just continue to get chances and opportunities. And you use them and use them and use them until hopefully you finally one day connect with the ball. That's not God's plan for marriage. Marriage was never designed to be something that functions in this way. God says when it comes to marriage, I've designed it to be a lifetime arrangement. That's why. In Matthew 19, verse 5, Jesus said that a man is to leave father and mother, and he is to cleave to his wife. In this same verse, Matthew 19, verse 5, we find the words one flesh. Then in Matthew 19, verse 6, Jesus says two people, husband, wife, male, female, they become one. God is the one who joins together a man and a woman, a male and a female, and God says they're not to be separated. Matthew 19, verse 6. The one flesh arrangement described by Jesus, the one flesh arrangement instituted by God, Genesis chapter 2, is designed to be the closest type of relationship that we will probably experience in this life. Save maybe the relationship that we have with Christ. I've known, and it's sad for me to say this, but I've known over the years some individuals who can and will share things with a friend on a level that is not as intimate, that's not as detailed, that's not as personal when it comes to their spouse. And that's one reason, especially when you start mixing genders, a female with a male friend, a male with a female friend, they start sharing those kinds of intimate details and things that they don't share with their spouse. That's one reason. A common reason for adultery. Creating that degree, that level of emotional intimacy with someone other than a spouse has led to a great deal of heartache. Throughout the years. Throughout time. When we get married to someone, when we sit down and decide we're going to marry this individual, we're saying, I want you. I've chosen you. I've selected you to be my most intimate associate. I'm going to choose to tell things to you that no one else gets to know. I'm going to open up my life, my heart, my feelings, my thoughts to you in a way that no one else is going to experience. And yet, even though that's God's design for marriage, do you not find with the people that you know that there are individuals who will spend more time with their cell phones and their iPads than with their spouse? I can name some people in that category. More people than I'd like to name or know. But marriage, God says, is designed to be an intimate relationship. It's also, God says, designed to be an exclusive relationship. When we think about marriage from a biblical perspective, we find that it is a physical union. One flesh, Matthew 19, 5 and 6. It is designed to be an emotional union. It is designed to be an intellectual union. And there is also a spiritual component to it if it is being carried out in the right way. In past generations, that was often understood, at least to a certain degree, and typically heeded, even by some people who were not necessarily religious. But I'll tell you this, at least from where I stand, when it comes to the current generation of adults, and I'm thinking those that are about 18 up to maybe 25, 28, there's been a giant shift in thinking. And the differences that we now are beginning to see are by and large not positive. I've had the experience of actually sitting across the table from a young Christian and hearing these words. If the marriage that we're talking about does not work out, this was someone who is engaged, I'll just get a divorce. I never thought in my lifetime I would hear a member of the church actually come out and admit that. But I've heard it. And other preachers are hearing the same kind of thing. Well, that's the wisdom of the world. That's the idea, we're just going to continue to stand at the plate and we're just going to keep swatting balls. And if spouse one doesn't work out, we're going to try two and three and four and five. And then one day we'll be told to marry or we'll be dead. If someone is in their 20s and wants to get married, they are making a long commitment. At least in most cases. We don't know how long they're going to last, but how long the life will last. But if they're going to live to the typical age of 70, 80, 90, then they're making a long commitment. The commitment that a person makes when he or she decides to get married is that I'm going to take you. I'm committing myself to you until death or until you are sexually unfaithful. And in that case, I may get a divorce, I may not. A 20-year-old may find it difficult at that time in life to comprehend living for another 50 or 60 years. And certainly making a commitment to the person that they say they love for that same period of time. But that's what we're doing. And we need to try to give some consideration to the fact that as we're thinking about marriage, we're thinking about joining ourselves to a person that's going to be with us two or three times longer than the number of years we've lived up to this time. And as we think about that, being joined to a person, for example, for 50 years, we should know that by the end of five decades, we're probably not going to feel like we did when we were 20. We're not going to look like we did when we're 20. If we're married to someone for 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 or more years, our spouse at the end of that period may no longer be able to see. We might be joined to a person that can no longer hear. We might be in a relationship now with that person that can no longer walk or talk. And maybe that person that we promised to keep for life can no longer get out of bed. Marriage means when we enter into this relationship that we are going to be joined to this person till death parts us. Not till the fun stops. But when it comes to the modern idea of marriage, that's it. When I stop loving you, when I find someone who's stronger, when I find someone who has more money, when I find someone who is prettier, see ya, because I found someone else. Marriage, according to God's plan, is one of the most amazing things that people will ever find on this earth. But as we look at man, just as we've looked at on the last several Sunday mornings in church history, people have fouled it up. Man has messed it up in a lot of ways. On just about every level, man has tried to tamper with God's plan for marriage, to pervert it, twist it, and he's made a mess out of it. Adam and Eve, a couple united by God, were told to be fruitful and multiply. Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. God's plan was for children to come into this world through marriage. But as we look at our society, what do we find? Are the majority of children still born in wedlock? Are they still born after people get married? Or are we seeing something else? Well, in our day and time, we've well passed the 40% mark where young people are having children out of wedlock. Children are brought into a world not only out of wedlock, but we also find that it's fashionable, it's common for people to live together. Let's have a trial marriage. Let's just come together and see how it goes. The idea, the biblical concept of a home has been so damaged by society that I'm persuaded we now have a majority of people in our nation who have no biblical comprehension of what God intended the home to be. And that's sad. And there is, as far as I can see, no reasonable way that that's going to change, at least in the immediate future. Marriage, as we think about it from a Bible perspective, is leaving one's parents. But you know, in our day and time, we've come up with the idea of helicopter parents. God says, leave them. Now, you should completely forsake them, but there's definitely to be a disconnect there. You know, you're setting up your own household. Their mom and dad, sometimes they want to be helicopter parents hovering over the new couple. Marriage is designed to be a one-flesh relationship. Two people become one. But folks will say, well, let's not go that far. Let's just have a trial run. In the home, the woman is to be loved by the man. Well, we think, well, that everybody knows that. Well, they may know it, but they're not practicing it. Paul said, Ephesians 5, verse 25, husbands, love your wives. And then he illustrated that love by comparing it to the love that Christ has for his church. Then in that next chapter, same book, Ephesians, but this time chapter 6, verse 4, Paul said to fathers, treat your children well. Dads are warned against provoking their kids. The world needs that message because that's not how a lot of homes are operating. The male parent, the dad, is to nurture and admonish in the Lord. Wives are to be that helpmeet for the husband, Genesis 2, verse 18. They're to be in subjection to the husbands, 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 2. And Peter, in these same two verses, spoke about wives being a good example. When we look at just these two or three verses from Ephesians and 1 Peter chapter 3, we find verses that the world absolutely hates. Society, by and large, doesn't like much of what the Bible says about marriage. The idea of a woman being subjecting herself to her husband, that's often ridiculed. The idea that children need to be disciplined by their parents, oh, that's abuse, according to some in society. Children needing to obey mom and dad, Ephesians 6, verses 1 through 3, is sometimes labeled as limiting their self-expression. The world has all kinds of ideas about marriage. And it's trying to sell us those ideas on every hand. But you know, all we need to do is look at the homes in society and see how they're faring with the world's ideas about marriage. And it's a state of disaster. It's a state of disaster. The ideas from society when it comes to marriage they have resulted in, and they continue to cause confusion, chaos, heartache, sin, and very possibly will bring some people, lead some people to hell. God's plan is always the best way when it comes to marriage or anything else. Marriage is something for this life. Jesus said marriage, Mark chapter 12, verse 25, is not going to have a part in eternity. But just as people have twisted it in this life, so people have twisted some other things. In fact, just about every part of God's plan has somehow been twisted. But we as a nation, we in our own families, need to be sure that we've gone back to the Bible. And that's the standard that we're using. It's what we need. It's what our friends need. It's what our neighbors need. And it is what our relatives need. Will we, in our life, individually, as a husband and wife, as a family, as a housewife, as a student, as someone in the work world, as a retiree? Will we be someone who commits our life to God and His Word and encourage others to do the same thing? That's the way to have a strong household, a way to have a strong congregation, a way to have a strong family, and a way to have a strong nation. In just a moment, we're going to sing a song selected especially for this lesson. Give me the Bible. That needs to be our mindset. Give me the Bible so I can follow it every single day. We've got it. Will we follow it when it comes to marriage and everything else? If you say yes, have you become a Christian? Faith, repentance, confession, baptism, and now faithful, committed Christian living to the best of your ability every single day. If not, then today as we sing, Give Me the Bible, let's make this our choice and do it now as we stand and sing.